The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
One pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez and toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
Welcome to your Monday edition of Fantasy Baseball Today, everybody. It's March, baseball month. We're excited. We got a lot to talk about, including some spring training standouts for you. Chris Davis, is he a thing again? Welcome to the show. So Adam Azer with Scott White and Chris Towers here, and we have to finish up starting pitcher. We got to go through our favorite starting pitchers after the top 50, but also if you missed the position previews, we'll recap everything. We'll give you a quick overview of how we feel at each position. What's up, guys? Scott White, happy Monday to you.
Adam, how's it going?
Hey, it's going well. Hey. Chris and I are stressed right now. We are doing a live fantasy football startup dynasty draft. And I could do a regular draft, but when I start thinking about youth, Chris, this is difficult. This is a difficult chore.
Well, and the draft room doesn't work right now in the off season at this point. So that's just adding
right
so many complications to the whole process. It's really fun.
All right.
Really enjoy.
Well, we're through two rounds, so we'll see how it goes. If Chris and I don't respond to Scott for like 40 seconds at a time, you know why. Now, I don't know if the injury news and notes segment is going to be great today. It might be better tomorrow. Tomorrow we plan on having a points league mock draft on the show, on the air. But Aaron Judge, Scott, he's got shoulder, pectoral, weird issues. Going to have another MRI today on Monday. We don't know the results if he's already had it. He probably has. We don't know the results yet. But when... if you're drafting today on March 2nd, when would you draft Aaron Judge?
I don't really think I'm inclined to lower him that much right now. Aaron Boone said just yesterday he's not worried. It's a long-term issue. And I mean, it helps that I'm not somebody who's going to draft Aaron Judge anyway, but I would take him at a discount.
Like, well, I was thinking... I'm getting a little nervous. I was thinking like round 5 in a 12-team league, like a 50th overall, something like that.
That's probably where I'd start thinking about it. Yeah. He goes on average, what, like round 4?
No, three? Early round 3.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably about the point where, regardless of this injury, if I see Aaron Judge is still there, I'm like, then maybe I need to take him this draft.
You just don't like Aaron Judge. Okay, so Chris, how about you? When would you be like, it's Judge time?
Probably round 4, but you know, I'm a little less aware of the injury than most people are.
Okay. And we'll see. Hopefully we'll get some updated information, be able to talk to you about it tomorrow. Cody Bellinger left with side discomfort. Do we know anything about this? He was scratched.
Haven't seen anything yet. He was scratched from today's lineup is what I know.
Chuck Peterson is expected to be ready for opening day, whatever. Blake Snell, maybe not. I don't know how you can't be a little concerned about Blake Snell. He's already got a little bit of an elbow issue. Now, remember, I said on the show on Friday, I don't remember who we were talking about, but I made the Clayton Kershaw comparison. Like, Kershaw was injured in spring training of 2019. And didn't make his debut until April 15th. Of course, in spring training, I was probably freaking out about Clayton Kershaw.
And he was.
Yeah, he had a great season. He was the number 10 starting pitcher, did not go on the IL.
The difference is, that was a back issue. And Blake Snell, it's an elbow, and More concerningly, it's an elbow injury that he dealt with last season and had surgery on it, I believe, in July. And that was just, I believe that was just a surgery to clean up loose bodies. Yeah. It wasn't like a ligament issue, but
right.
The fact is he's a starting pitcher who hasn't shown he can pitch more than 180 innings in a season, dealt with elbow injuries last year, and is now dealing with elbow injuries. If you're telling me the players we need to be concerned about with injuries, that is the profile I'm much more likely to be concerned about than Aaron Judge or even Giancarlo Stanton.
I'm actually not concerned about this because the cortisone shot is not where the ligament is. It's on the back of the elbow. And considering Freddie Freeman is going through the same thing with his cleanup procedure in his elbow, I assume it's just another scar tissue thing and not, I'm not that concerned about it. It doesn't sound like ligament stuff.
Okay, but I do wonder, because remember, I'll try to get the official stat up, but just doesn't pitch deep into games anymore. And they right. kind of treat
well,
him
as kid. Never really did.
Well, I think he sort of did in his Cy Young season 2018 but before the elbow injury.
That was only because he was pitching so efficiently and had such good luck on balls in play. You know, you remember he had a sub 2 ERA and, you know, and a crazy low BABIP, but he really wasn't like throwing a lot of pitches. He was still maxing out at like 100 pitches most of the time. And if he didn't have that same efficiency, he wouldn't have been able to go as deep into games.
So he has made 31 starts. Blake Snell, 31 starts between his 2018 IL stint and the elbow surgery he had in 2019. I know I gave the stat out, but I doubt anybody remembers it exactly. In those 31 starts, 6 or more innings in 16 of them, half of his starts, 6 or more innings, 7 or more innings twice, 100 pitches in 10 of those starts, and only once did he throw more than 105 pitches. So, I mean, you're lucky that he is so efficient. He is that good on a pitch-by-pitch basis, I guess. But
this is the Rays pitcher we should be downgrading for workload concerns. And I really like Blake Snell, and I want to draft him a lot this year, but there are more reasons to be concerned about him than Charlie Morton.
Well, who would you rather have, Blake Snell or Charlie Morton?
In a vacuum, Blake Snell, at their current costs, Charlie Morton.
Scott, you agree?
I have Morton ranked higher, so Morton.
Whoa, okay. All right, more news items. So here's a quote from Ron Renicki, who's the manager for the Red Sox, about Chris Sale. So with Chris, it's just building up to where we feel comfortable with him and getting him through the year, keeping him strong, hopefully September and hopefully into October. Not the first time we've heard something like this about kind of maintenance on Chris Sale. Does this mean anything to you, this quote from Renicki?
Chris Sale has health concerns, right? But this... the current one is related to pneumonia and him losing weight and him being on his timetable for getting ready for the season being pushed back 2 weeks. Ron Renick, he said he wanted every starting pitcher to make 6 starts to be ready for the season. Sale's only going to have time for 4, so I think he's going to miss 2 turns, and that's it.
Freddie Freeman is not concerned about his elbow. Should be swinging soon. Any downgrades on Freeman or still a surefire first-round pick?
Should be playing this week. Still a surefire. Well, I mean, he falls to round 2 sometimes, but yeah, it's not because of injury concerns.
Right. Seattle first baseman Evan White has groin soreness. He's not someone we're super interested in from a fantasy perspective, right? Evan White?
No, but it's interesting. Scott wrote about this in one of his spring training notes, I think, right? About Evan White?
Yes.
And how, you know, he's never really hit for much power. The Mariners gave him this, you know, record contract for a player who's never been above AA, and the Mariners' internal metrics show that he actually has like elite batted ball exit velocity. And so, you know, it could be a case of someone who gets to the majors and the power blooms with a few adjustments.
All right, Evan White, we'll keep an eye on him. So Andrew McCutchen is not going to be ready for the start of the season. He's recovering from ACL surgery. He'll start the year on the IL. Brent Honeywell, Tampa Bay starting pitcher, he threw a bullpen session. Maybe that's a name we will talk about more later in the season. What's Honeywell's timetable?
Don't forget about him.
Yeah, right. Top prospect. Tommy John, right?
Tommy John.
And fractured his elbow.
Yeah, fractured his elbow in like his first bullpen session after coming back from Tommy John surgery or something.
All right. Mike Leake may not be ready for opening day. He's in the Arizona possible rotation, but he might not make it to the rotation for opening day. Dave Roberts said something about Kenley Jansen. He said, quote, as good right now as when he was at his best last season. So a good start to spring training for Kenley.
He went to Driveline Baseball this off season, which is that research institute in Seattle where a lot of pitchers who've done their workout program have seen an increase in velocity. So they're also good at breaking down mechanics and getting pitchers back on track there. And Kenley Jansen, he was his cutter, which is really his fastball, it's his primary pitch, was back to like 92, 94 when it had been down a little the past couple of years. It's already back up at that level at the start of spring training. So that's
excellent.
That could reverse the decline for him.
All right. So he's having a good start to spring. We'll give you a few more in a little bit. Masahiro Tanaka and Zach Eflin said that the baseball feels different. And now the spring training baseball apparently felt different than the regular season baseball last year. But is this something we're monitoring, basically, what people are saying about the ball?
I don't think there's anything we can monitor before the season. I don't think we're going to know. We'll know like 5 days into the season. That just won't help us much. Because part of the issue is you're going to need a decent sample size of batted balls to really be able to tell. And that data shows up pretty quickly. If you remember last postseason, you know, people started talking about the baseball being different in the first round. So it's just there aren't enough parks. I think there's only two in the spring, one in Arizona, one in Florida, that have the TrackMan data available. Mm-hmm. And so I just don't think we're gonna know anytime soon.
We've also seen it change in season. In 2016, most famously, and then of course last postseason, it seems like it did too. So if MLB, what MLB is using to explain it, or at least the majority of it, which is manufacturing variability affecting the seam height, then like that's gonna vary from batch to batch, you know? Like it's kind of wild that something so minuscule and uncontrollable can have that big of an impact on the way the game is played. But you know, we've seen throughout the history of baseball huge swings and when offense is peaking and not, and maybe that explains all of it. I don't know.
Maybe. Baseball is pretty important, apparently. Giancarlo Stanton's feeling better. We didn't talk about this, but some players who might be interesting if Stanton and Judge both start the season on the IL. Miguel Andujar has been playing left field. Clint Frazier's having a good spring as well. Mike Tauchman, not as exciting as those two guys. Griffin Canning likely to start the season on the IL. Sorry, Scott. Nick Senzel dealing with a shoulder injury, and Victor Robles is day-to-day. Make sure you join our Facebook group. It's awesome. It's really fun. Fantasy Baseball Today. Search for that or go to facebook.com/groups/fantasybaseballtoday. And if you wouldn't be too troubled to leave us a kind review in Apple Podcasts or iTunes, as it used to be called, or anywhere you listen, that would be super awesome and super helpful. So let's talk pitchers here. This is our email of the day. And it comes, this is actually an email I got last year. And Josh has continued to follow up on it. He drafted no starting pitchers, and he emailed me last year after he drafted no starting pitchers in a 5x5 12-team league. And I said, you know, I'm kind of skeptical. Let me know how you're doing. And he would update me. Josh would keep updating me on his zero SP roster, basically, or at least on the draft. And he was always in first or second place, whatever. He won his league. So Josh wants me to promote his zero SP, not his like, not even zero, like zero RB is when you wait a little while to draft RBs. This is don't draft any starting pitchers in a 5x5 league. So his team from last year, I mean, he crushed it. Grandal, Bellinger, Mondesi, Justin Turner, Francisco Lindor, Bryce Harper, Juan Soto, Joey Gallo, Yonder Alonso. So he obviously drafted well. He had Jose Leclerc, Kirby Yates, Felipe Vasquez, Pedro Strop, Brandon Morrow, Keone Kella, and Stammen as his relievers when he drafted. But without, you know, the point is, and I kind of like it, this is an alternative way to play fantasy baseball in a 5x5 league. I did sort of a hybrid version of that where I drafted SPs with my first two picks and then basically neglected that position. But this is just a complete, not going to draft any starting pitchers. I've heard about other people who have done this. and succeeded. And what do you guys think?
It's known as the Marmol strategy. Mm-hmm. I can't remember who came up with that. I'm trying to look for it now. But I wanted to give credit, but it's been around for a while, and it's not a perfect strategy, but it can work. You can't miss on hitting is the biggest thing. You're not going to pay up for the elite closers, I think, is the way you do it. I think you pretty much want to go hitting, and then the late rounds, it's more like mid-tier closers, elite non-closers. It's a very narrow needle to try to thread.
And but I think
it's possible.
A lot of these have, a lot of this type of format have rules that make this impossible. Like, he doesn't have a single starting pitcher on his roster, right? Like, usually there's correct. Like innings minimums and that sort of thing, or else you don't get any pitching points, whether it's week to week, when innings minimums are year long. So that would be something to check too. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly been done. I feel like it's probably harder to do in this environment because there is less differentiation between hitters. And so to guarantee yourself that advantage in the hitting categories is more difficult, but, it's possible. And, yeah, look, I mean, if you play, it also kind of depends on how good your competition is too, right? Which if you're confident in yourself to pick out like all the great trendy pitchers, because you don't think anybody else is plugged in enough or that many people are in your league to know that, then you might be, that would be another time to try it as well.
Yeah, I guess I just wonder how heavy do you have to go within this strategy to win ERA, whip, and saves? Like, can't you have some starting pitchers? Make yourself a little bit more competitive in strikeouts and wins?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly could go halfway if you need a couple starting pitchers. But right. Then you're obviously going to have to, I think you're going to have to spend a couple early round picks on pitchers to get the kind of pitchers who you can be confident aren't going to drag down the ERA and whip that you're relying on those relief pitchers who throw far fewer innings to pull through on.
You know what the issue I had with the strategy when I used it in that roto draft a couple weeks ago was I just didn't like that many relief pitchers and that many closers. You know, like how many of them are going to give me elite ratios? I had Josh Hader, but I think there's a scenario where he's an amazing pitcher but doesn't get that many saves. And then I had Taylor Rogers, who I really like. But the relief, in terms of like great closers with elite ratios and 100 strikeouts, I don't know how many there are of those. I don't know how many I feel confident in. It's probably like less than 10.
Yeah, so, it's not many. You're right.
So you got to get some middle relievers in there that have elite ratios. I didn't draft any of them, but we didn't have any bench spots, or I probably would have. But just keep that in mind.
And you probably have to pay for the ones that are. You don't have to pay as much as you would for a high-end starting pitcher, but it's not like...
Right, exactly.
There are too many of those guys available late, particularly in a league where anybody else is employing this strategy too, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of volatility among relief pitchers. There's even more than among starting pitchers. Chris talks about this a lot because there's never... You know, playing it year to year, there's no relief pitcher who really has a good sample of innings to give to make you feel confident that's exactly who he is.
Right.
And so you might end up burning through a few relievers before you settle on one that or settle on a group that you can really depend on. And then even if you do, like one of them could suddenly bottom out. And then so you kind of just chase relievers all year.
All right, guys, so let's get into the starting pitcher leftovers. We left off with the top 50 starting pitchers in average draft position. The last group we talked about was Matt Boyd, Sean Manaea, Julio Urias, Roman Marquez, and Carlos Martinez. After that, we've got Kenta Maeda, who's RP eligible, Lance McCullers, Jake Odorizzi, who had an uptick in velocity last year and pitched very well, Masahiro Tanaka. And if he's talking about the ball being different, that's big news because he could not throw his splitter last year. I think he had issues with the seams. Luke Weaver, I smitten right now. So Maeda, McCullers, Odorizzi, Tanaka, and Luke Weaver. Chris doesn't really want us to sing. I think that he doesn't really believe in Weaver like I do. Is that right?
I don't believe in Luke Weaver.
Not like you were like, well, who did you say we should be singing about other than Luke Weaver? There was another stupid song you wanted us to sing about a sleeper.
There was the terrible Zach Greinke one, but I can't remember who the other one was. I'm sure there was one.
Well, what do you make of this group of five? Maeda, McCullers, Odorizzi, Tanaka, Weaver.
I like them a lot. Odorizzi is probably the only one I won't draft, but this is definitely a group of players that I'm going to be choosing from. I think in the head-to-head auction that we did last Friday, I think I only got McCullers out of this group, but Weaver and Maeda especially were definitely players who I was targeting, and I just couldn't get them.
Scott, do you agree that Odorizzi is not someone you'll be drafting in this group?
I have a hard time understanding what went so right for Odorizzi last year. He had the best numbers of this group last year, and he was throwing the ball harder. He was getting more strikeouts. The strikeouts increase was basically all on the fastball and the fact he was throwing it harder. And I don't know. I don't have any shares of him yet. He would probably have to fall beyond this point. By this point, I have the bulk of my pitching staff already assembled. So that's part of the reason why I never have to resort to an Odorizzi. But I would prefer Weaver of this group just because of the upside. He was kind of like Frankie Montas, although only about half the time, half as long as Frankie Montas. He was looking like he had taken that ace turn, and then he got hurt and missed a lot of the season.
He was hurt. That's the difference between him and Frankie Montas.
That doesn't help either.
Yeah. And Weaver, like, if you look at his ERA in four seasons, 570, 388, 495, 294. But in his first two seasons, he had a really good ERA, and then he just got crushed in like his last two or three appearances. So I think he's pitched a lot better than his numbers. Now, 2018 was just bad for him, but he bounced back nicely, and I think he's going to be, I think he's a must draft guy, you know, and he's a top 60 pitcher. But yeah. I don't know. It just feels like more than that to me. It just feels like he's got really a chance to be a must start.
Yeah. Oh. I agree. He does. There are a lot of questions with him, but what did he make? 8 starts last year? It looked like he was on his way to answering those questions, but it wasn't enough of a sample to say for sure that they were answered. And then now he's recovering from an injury, so we don't really know how that's going to impact him. But yeah, I think there's a lot of upside here. I'll add, too, switching gears a little, Tanaka might be the player single most impacted by what the balls are like.
Yeah, right.
We talk about it with hitters a lot, but Tanaka might be the single most affected player because he just didn't have his splitter last year. He could not get the right grip on the ball with the seams being lowered, and he was pretty much useless in fantasy because of that. And I don't think the ceiling is crazy high for him. I don't think the ceiling is as high as it is for Weaver or even like McCullers, but he was certainly a usable starting pitcher in fantasy prior to last year and could end up being a good value this year if the ball is back.
Yeah, the only thing I would point out is it's been a while since he was really very good. He was pretty good in 2018. He was pretty bad in 2017. So he's been bad in 2 out of the last 3 years.
So, moving on to the next group of five here in average draft position. Chris just made a pick in the Dynasty draft. Good job, Chris. Marcus Stroman, Mike Foltynewicz, Andrew Heaney, Caleb Smith, and Joe Musgrove. Stroman, Folty, Heaney, Caleb Smith, and Joe Musgrove. Scott, you like anyone there?
Not especially.
Feels like a pretty big drop from the previous group, doesn't it?
I don't know. They're all similar. Like they could be good, but they probably won't be. That's how I would classify all of them, or most of them anyway. Foltynewicz was after a stint in the minors, he came back looking much stronger. It seemed like his slider was more or less back to form. Remember, he had a lot of elbow troubles last year.
He was awesome. Spring. He had a 2.65 ERA after being recalled with a strikeout per inning in 10, a little bit less than a strikeout per inning in 10 starts. He was really, really good.
But remember, prior to last spring, prior to the elbow trouble and how it affected him mechanically, like, he was a trendy bust pick because it didn't look like the underlying numbers backed up how he performed in 2018. And that was still the case when he was performing well down the stretch last year. So there's still plenty of reason for skepticism there. Andrew Heaney's, his strikeout rate keeps going up and up, but he doesn't seem to perform any better overall.
He's such a weird pitcher.
Yeah.
Because he throws mostly sinkers with his fastball, or two seam fastballs, I guess, because they're not sinking. He throws them up in the zone and he gets a lot of whiffs with it. It's such a strange profile. And the fact that it's so unlike how nearly every other pitcher succeeds that it's hard to say for sure whether he's going to figure out. I do like him quite a bit as a late round sleeper target.
So. Yeah. Heaney had a 14.1% swinging strike rate. And that's really, really good. And unlike Nick Pavetta, he's not going in the 13th round, you know? You don't have to jump and reach for Andrew Heaney.
Was Joe Musgrove part of this
group? Yeah, he was. Yeah.
I love Joe Musgrove. I wrote my my ode to the Pirates starting pitching staff earlier today. It's up on CBSSports.com. And I think this could be one of the most valuable groups in the league, especially given the fact that I believe Musgrove is the highest drafted of them as starter 62-212 overall. His velocity has been up in the spring. It was up over his last five starts last year. And over those last five starts, now it's only five starts, but the results were really, really good. He's got a deep and varied arsenal. And the difference between Joe Musgrove throwing 91 miles an hour and Joe Musgrove throwing 94 miles an hour could be significant. And the Pirates starting pitching staff should be better because they got rid of Ray Searidge and his throw fastballs at the knees all the time, no matter what approach. And they've got a more analytically inclined pitching coach in Oscar Marin, who just from everything that he's talked about, from everything that the pitchers have talked about, it sounds like it's going to be a really good fit.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, how the mighty have fallen. Ray Searidge used to be the darling of fantasy baseball. Out with the old, in with the new.
But that was just because, like, he turned Ivan Nova into a good pitcher. You know?
No,
like,
not just him. He had a good track record with a bunch of pitchers who had burned out elsewhere. But it's just kind of an outdated model,
like
he was using.
They've thrown the most fastballs in the league throughout the last four seasons as a pitching staff. They were second in the fourth year. And what we've seen with both Tyler Glasnow and Gerrit Cole was they got away from the Pirates. They started throwing their fastballs up in the zone, but throwing their fastballs a little less often and just mixing up their pitches more. It's something that pretty much everybody on the Pirates has talked about. And I think it could lead to, you know, this is a very talented pitching staff. So I think they could finally start to live up to their potential.
All right. Chris is about to be attacked by his cat in the background. That's pretty fun. I wish we were doing this on video. Let's get back to it. Let's get a few more here, guys, and then we'll finish up here. Just tell me who you're interested in drafting. Miles Michaelis, Dallas Keuchel, Joey Lucchesi, Dustin May, and AJ Puck.
Puck.
Uh-huh.
May doesn't seem to have a rotation spot.
No, but he'll get his chance at some point this year, and he gets drafted in every league I've been a part of, so I think it seems like people are willing to stash him for that opportunity. Puck and May are the lottery tickets here.
And Keuchel and Stroman are probably better in points leagues, is that fair?
Yeah, they're going to have high-ish whips, but they're going to, on a per-start basis, their innings will be high. Keuchel's had some durability issues over the years, but he goes deep when he's healthy, and that's what matters more to me, is the impact when they're actually in your lineup. But for Roto, they're probably going to pull down your whip, especially if you're looking to have a good pitching staff and not just a survivable pitching staff.
And not going to really help your strikeouts either, especially Keuchel.
Yeah. I mean, Stroman... Well, it's... Stroman could be okay just because of how deep he pitches into games. It's not a good K per nine, but the total should be respectable.
Okay, moving on. We've got Jose Urquidy, Ryan Yarbrough, John Gray, Dakota Hudson, and Cole Hamels. Urquidy, Yarbrough, John Gray, Dakota Hudson, Cole Hamels.
Urquidy is an upside pick. He should have that fourth spot for the Astros pretty much locked down. There is another Astros pitcher I'm even more excited to draft who is competing for the fifth spot, but Urquidy has a really good...
Josh James?
Yeah, Josh James.
Yeah, Chris's sleeper yesterday.
I'm totally on board with that. Urquidy has a really good changeup, and he's had trouble developing that third pitch. But you look at his numbers from the minors last year, and there's a lot of strikeouts there. And he looks solid. I mean, he's definitely a little rough around the edges, but he looked like he could be a viable option during the little bit he pitched in the majors last year.
And Ryan Yarbrough, is it weird to say that he's a better roto pitcher than a head-to-head pitcher? Because he is SPARP eligible, but he basically never gets quality starts because of the opener, right? I guess they started using the opener less with him later on in the season.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. Totally. But we figured out that you're more likely to get a win. You can get a win.
He's gotten a lot of wins the past 2 years.
That's why I think he's better for roto than head-to-head, because in head-to-head, the win matters, but you also can get the quality start bonus. If he's not going to get that, you'd rather just have the guy getting wins in a roto league.
Yeah. So, all right, we're making our way down the draft board here. We've got some good names, though. He's got a pretty good slider now, actually.
I just wanted to correct myself on that. Looks like he has the three pitches he needs. And yeah, I think the biggest concern with him, Urquidy. I think the biggest concerns with him are workload and just how willing are the Astros to stick with him, given that they have a lot of these kind of fringy rotation guys if he struggles. I think those would probably be the biggest concerns with Urquidy.
And I think we got a lot of interesting sleepers here. I still like Cole Hamels. Now, the whip's going to be high with him, but he was good before his injury last year, and he was good after he got traded away from Texas in 2018. So I still think he's got a little bit left, and he's about 70th pitcher off the board, 270th overall pick. Michael Kopech, Yanni Chirinos, Mike Fiers, Aaron Civale, Marco Gonzalez. Well, Kopech feels like the standout there.
Yes. I'm not sure if he's going to be in the rotation to start the season. There's another White Sox prospect-ish pitcher in Dylan Cease, who I think I like a little more. But yeah, Kopech has huge potential. It's just this is his first season back from Tommy John surgery. So there's going to be limitations. There's going to be probably some bumps in the road to keep in mind. But yeah, when he gets on, I think he could be very, very valuable.
And We've got Mitch Keller, who I know we like, Adrian Hauser, John Lester, Ross Stripling, Jay Happ, who, you know, is pretty okay down the stretch. Rick Porcello, I'm somewhat interested in him in the National League now. I don't know if there's anyone else. Chris Bass. But I know we like Hauser and Keller. Who do we like more, Keller or Hauser?
Keller. Scott probably likes Hauser more. He left today's start with a thumb injury. It doesn't sound like it's serious, but just wanted to note that.
I'm there.
Yeah, I do like Hauser more. Keller has the higher ceiling. They're both in my sleepers column. So I'll probably have more shares of Hauser, but I like them both in this range.
Keller's kind of the star of the Pirates column that I wrote today. His fastball was awful last year, but there's no reason it should be. Like, he averaged 95.4 miles per hour with it. He was in the 91st percentile in spin. It has all the makings of an elite pitch. And by the Aces metric, he was, I think, a top 20 pitcher. Now, the results were not great, but the slider and curveball already look like absolute elite swing and miss pitches. If the fastball performs better, and he's talked about being less predictable with the fastball, using the fastball less, which is in line with the changes that the Pirates staff as a whole are making that I like. I think he has, you know, top 20 starting pitcher potential.
Keller was a top prospect, a top pitching prospect for several years, actually. And he only developed his best pitch last year. That slider Chris referred to. Mm-hmm. That didn't come till last year. It's his best swing and miss pitch. And he was a top prospect even before he had it.
So let's finish up, guys. Just give me some names. I'm going to be taking a lot of Brendan McKay, assuming he's the 90th pitcher off the board.
Yep.
And who else? Like Chris had mentioned Steven Matz in an episode several weeks ago.
It sounds like he might not actually have a rotation spot, though. The Mets might swap him Michael Wacha.
Okay.
Which seems dumb, but it's not my decision to make, so whatever.
Both kind of swingman roles there.
Domingo Armand and Michael Pineda are going to be suspended to start the year, but they're worthy of picks if you can afford to stash them. And is there anyone else that we haven't talked about, Scott, that you really like?
You said Pineda and Herman, yeah. Both?
Yeah.
Pineda especially. He's due to come back in early May. And he looks like before he got suspended for PEDs, he was leaning on that changeup, that a long elusive changeup, that third pitch to go with the fastball and slider. He was leaning on it more than ever and was really having good success there down the stretch. So Pineda's somebody I'm trying to stash away in just about every league.
Let's not forget about Nathan Eovaldi, who was very good in 2018. Injuries kind of wrecked his 2019, but he could still be pretty good.
Alex Wood, mm-hmm. who appears to have the fifth starter job already for the Dodgers. He spent a lot of time at Driveline Baseball, like Kenley Jansen, this offseason, and is throwing his fastball the hardest he's ever thrown it. The last time he threw his fastball the way he's throwing it right now was, I believe it was 2017 in the first half. And you look at his stats from that stretch, he was Cy Young, basically. He was incredible. Let me find the numbers right now. It was 2017. The first half of 2017, Alex Wood, who of course is going to have all the advantages of every Dodgers pitcher, great supporting cast. He went 10-0 with a 1.67 ERA, 0.89 whip, and 10.8 K per nine. So that's exciting, right?
Yeah, not bad.
Dylan Bundy is somebody I would be excited to draft in this range. Change of scenery for a guy who, of course, was the best pitching prospect in baseball at one point, still has that great kind of split changeup, right? That's what it is, kind of a hybrid pitch there where he gets mm-hmm. a lot of swings and misses on it. And I better pitching environment, and I think just working with new people, he's having a good spring so far. This could be the year he takes off. Definitely a worthwhile gamble for a next to nothing cost.
And to keep in with the theme of my appearance on this podcast today, Chris Archer. He got away from throwing the sinker in the second half. What's that?
Never. Not for
okay,
me.
So like no, that's no, a thing at this that rate, a lot of people say, fine, and I will fine. Just say that is the worst approach you can have in fantasy sports.
I'm just
saying,
joking.
I will never, but no, but that's the thing is I think it's an interest. It's a valid point. There are people who will say that guy burned me too many times. I will never trust him again. Throw that thinking out of the window. You cannot think that way. All you can do is take each pitcher and each player, look at what they are likely to do, what you expect them to do, and draft them based on that. Don't, and it's not like Chris Archer, he's had a little bit of injury trouble the last couple of seasons, but the bigger issue was that he got away from what made him successful, which was throwing his four-seam fastball up in the zone, throwing his slider for whiffs. Over the last 12 starts last season, he was at like 12 K per nine. He still had a 4.65 ERA, but the home run rate went down to 1.35 per nine, which is totally reasonable in this environment. And the FIP was 3.81.
That's a pretty high home run rate, man.
It's not, though. The average right now is like 1.2.
But that's the average of all pitchers, not the average of fantasy relevant pitchers. That's a really high number for a guy that you're putting in your lineup.
He's the 95th pitcher off the board.
It's fine. I get that. But it is a pretty high home run rate.
He's also such an elite strikeout pitcher that you would expect him to be able to limit the number of base runners that he allows when those home runs hit. He's not going to be a 3 ERA guy. But if he can be 3.7, 3.8,
that'd be nice.
With the number of strikeouts he gets,
It's been 4 years, I think, for Chris Archer since he's been under four. So
right, but that's what I'm saying. He made changes last year.
Okay, that is the end of starting pitcher for now.
No, it's not. No, it's not, oh. Adam. I still want to talk about more.
Okay.
There's a lot. There's okay. a lot of guys out there.
So we mentioned Dustin May as a draft and stash, hoping he breaks through later. I think there are a couple other pitchers that you should do that with. Nate Pearson, who's just looked unhittable this spring.
Go find the I retweeted it last night. Go find the fastball he threw to Josh Bell to strike him out in yesterday's start. It was just the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life.
That's of the Blue Jays, Nate Pearson. So obviously there's an easy in for him when they decide he's ready. And Mackenzie Gore, who these days is considered the best pitching prospect in baseball. And he will probably be up midseason. It might depend somewhat on how the Padres as a team are performing, but there's a good chance he's up. A little lower down, I would also put Forrest Whitley in this group. Like I said, the Astros have a lot of alternatives, and he's going to have to turn things around after a terrible year. But at this time a year ago, Forrest Whitley was considered the best pitching prospect. He had some mechanical issues going on. He looked better during his stint in the Arizona Fall League. So it's definitely too early to write him off. And if he has a good season, he's going to be right back on the path to earning a ticket into the big league rotation for a contender, no less. They may end up needing him come July or even sooner. And let's not forget about Forrest Whitley.
Are we done now?
Jordan Montgomery, Justice Sheffield. Who is the other guy? Dylan Cease.
Man, these guys are so good.
Kikuchi.
You say Kikuchi's throwing really hard. Why do I even bother drafting starting pitchers early? They're all so good late.
Exactly.
I love
it. These are all low percentage plays.
But
come on.
Some number of these guys are going to be top 30 pitchers next year.
Yeah.
Starting pitcher works.
If you can roster 20 starting pitchers and you don't have to worry about any of these guys going to anybody else, you'll probably come away with a pretty good pitching staff.
All right. So this segment took a lot longer than I thought. So I don't think we're going to have time for emails today. I think it's important, though, that we if we don't get to a lot of emails this week, I'll do a mailbag and I'll do an extra mailbag show before the weekend, or I'll air on Saturday or something like that. If Chris and Scott don't even have to be on it, if they don't want to, I'll find a guest. But I will address your emails, I promise, because it's very important to me. Now,
Tyler Bede.
Yes.
Sleeper.
Beedy.
Yes. Beedy eyes.
Beedy little eyes.
For the Giants.
All right, position preview recap. So I'm going to give you a position. You tell me your strategy on draft day for this position. Catcher, Chris.
If I can get Realmuto, Sanchez, Grandal, one of the big three, or... four, I guess Contreras also. I'm fine with that. Otherwise, I'm content waiting.
Scott?
Yeah, it's a good time to wait at catcher if I get a great value on Mitch Garver or any of the other top five, but it's usually Mitch Garver, then I'll take it like round 10, 11 range. But otherwise, I'm inclined to wait as well.
Okay, and I've never been more interested in drafting an elite catcher because they're just going so much later than we're used to seeing.
Yeah.
Now, last year, where Realmuto is going this year is somewhat similar to where Sanchez was going last year, 55th-ish overall. But Sanchez going 76th overall feels to me like very exciting stuff. First base. Scott, what's your take on first base?
So my take on first base is that, you know, if I pick in the top five, obviously Cody Bellinger. If I pick at the end of round one or round two, or at the beginning of round two, there's a chance I'll go after Freddie Freeman there. But otherwise, I don't see a huge difference between the guys who tend to fall at the position, Matt Olson sometimes, very often Josh Bell, and like a Pete Alonso, or certainly like Anthony Rizzo. At this point, who you can't count on a big home run total from. Like, I'm never going after that group.
Yeah, points league, I like Rizzo. Roto league is hands off for me.
Yeah, points league is a different...
Right.
Rizzo's a different animal in a points league. But even there, I mean, it's not like Josh Bell is... He has a good strikeout-to-walk ratio, too. Not as good as Rizzo. but you can, I still think the discount there makes it worth going after Bell instead, waiting for Bell instead and grabbing more starting pitchers in the Rizzo range.
Earlier I said Freddie Freeman's a surefire first round pick. Well, to me, he really is. If not first round, he's back end of the first round, early round two. Freeman's ADP is 17th right now. And there's one hitter that goes in that range that I might make the centerpiece of my drafts, and that's Jose Ramirez, because I've just more or less accepted that I am buying into Jose Ramirez, and I think if he's as good as I think he is, he's a first-round pick, maybe a top-five pick. So, like, I love Jose Ramirez, but after that, Freeman, to me, if he's really the 17th pick, there just aren't going to be many hitters behind him that are even close to as good as Freddie Freeman. I think he's a great second-round pick. You know, if you can get them. And yeah, so the group of Olsen, Abreu, Muncy, Bell, we sort of identified that as like a good value group at first base. And then if you want to wait a little bit longer, Scott, if you get shut out there, who are you looking at first base?
I think Trey Mancini is really undervalued, and he's kind of my ultimate fallback at this position. I guess my ultimate fallback, because there have been drafts where I've missed out even on Mancini. So let me figure out who that would be. Probably like,
Encarnacion for me.
Who?
And Edwin Encarnacion. 160th overall.
Yeah, he goes late, and I maybe it's unfair, but I just have a feeling this is going to be the year.
That's fine.
Just collapses.
I kind of felt that way about Nelson Cruz last year. And but 160th overall, I mean, okay, he doesn't work out. Yeah. You drop him, you pick up Luke Voit, Christian Walker, Ryan McMahon.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, no, I get your point. In drafts where Walker isn't drafted, like where that class of starting first baseman isn't drafted, but like in a 12-team roto league where you got those deeper lineups, they probably are. And that's been my ultimate fallback option. Like if I miss out on Bell and I miss out on Trey Mancini, then I'm probably just ignoring the rest of the position and being the guy who takes the worst first baseman. And that first baseman is Christian Walker.
So, Chris, let's go to second base. What are you thinking at second base?
I'm open to taking Jose Altuve at his cost. He's probably the only one of the big second basemen who I would, except for Ketel Marte. I am willing to take Ketel Marte as early as the end of the third round or early fourth round. Otherwise, you know, it's an interesting position, and I'm fine waiting for, you know, a Kevin Biggio, a Tommy Edman type.
And we've sort of identified Gleyber Torres as, obviously we understand his youth and his potential, but mm-hmm. his ADP just doesn't really seem to make sense.
It presumes it. It presumes he takes another step forward. And I don't think you can do that with an early pick like that, not with what you're giving up in that range. And it's not like second base is, it is the shallowest of the infield position, but it's not like it's so shallow that you should reach there. There's no justification for that.
Can you be the last person in your league to draft a second baseman and feel okay with it?
Probably not. You probably have to be the 10th person at the latest. It kind of, there's so many multi-eligible guys here. It kind of depends on how they get drafted. If they're all drafted as second baseman, you're probably good, but DJ LeMahieu might get drafted at first base, Max Muncy to play third base, Whit Merrifield in the outfield, Ketel Marte in the outfield. We just did a head-to-head points auction on Friday, so smaller lineup sizes, and I ended up with 4 second base eligible players myself. Mm. And so that obviously made things interesting for the rest of the league. It wasn't by intention. It's just how it turned out. I had LeMahieu at first, Max Muncy at third, Ketel Marte in my outfield. And then my actual second baseman was, I don't remember who it was, but it was, yeah, I had a lot of second basemen.
Give me a late round sleeper.
At second?
Yeah.
Garrett Hampson. Is that late enough?
That's late enough. 200th.
Yeah. I rank him higher than that, especially in a roto league where you need those steals so badly. He should give you a good total of them. But his playing time is questionable, and he'll play a decent amount, but will he play quite every day in a super utility role? I'm not sure about that.
And we go to third base.
Oh.
The money position. Well, what's up, Chris?
Luis Urias. I just want to say that.
Oh, okay. Third base. Bregman, Arenado, Rendon, Jose Ramirez, Rafael Devers, all going in the top 24. Devers not going to be on my team if he's going 24th overall. That is starting pitcher land right there. And not going to be Devers for me. But it's obviously a great position. Chris, what's your third base strategy?
I don't think you need a strategy for third base. I think third base is one of the positions, and I think shortstop and outfield are also in this discussion where you just kind of take what the draft gives you. If Bregman falls, like I've seen him in the 15 range, or Arenado falls, you take those guys. But otherwise, this is the position maybe more than any other where you just don't need a strategy. There's so many good options. You can go 20, 25 deep at the position before you run out of guys who you'd feel confident in as your starter.
Is there any third baseman that you avoid? You're like, no, I'm not going to do it.
I wouldn't draft Rafael Devers at his cost, and I haven't drafted him all this year. And I don't think I've drafted Chris Bryant. I may have gotten him in one auction, but that was just because the price was right. And then Machado at his price. So three guys between fifth and seventh at the position in ADP, I'm not confident that they're going to be worth their price.
And I know we like Miguel Sano a lot as a mid-round pick. Over to shortstop. Shortstop is Lindor, Bregman, Story, Turner, Tatis, all going in the top 20 with Lindor, Bregman, Story, and Turner in the top 12. You certainly can take a shortstop with your first-round pick. And I like Turner sixth overall. I don't want him to hit third, though. But if he doesn't hit third and he's batting first or second, I like Turner sixth overall for the steals.
Me too. And Roto.
Yeah, in Roto. And in Roto. Points, I think league. He'll probably fall to the third round. And he's just so good in points leagues. And people don't understand that.
Yeah, he tends to get undervalued in points leagues. Most of the base stealers do because I think it's an overcorrection. Where, okay, they get overvalued in Roto. Like, clearly this base stealer isn't this valuable in a real life context, but we're so desperate for steals, we have to take him too early. And then points leagues, maybe they get pushed down too far.
And Scott, do you have an overall shortstop strategy?
I tend to wind up with Marcus Semien a lot. Usually, basically, this is my strategy at every position, right? Like, depending on where I pick in round one or round two, I might grab the high-end player at that position. So if I pick sixth in a Roto league, I'll take Trey Turner as my shortstop. If I pick, seventh or eighth, I'll take Alex Bregman as my shortstop or third base, and we'll see where he winds up. If I pick at the end of round one, I might take Trevor Story. Or if he's there the early in round two, I might take him. But then beyond that, it's like there's this stretch from like round three to round six or five where I'm only taking starting pitchers. So I never even draft any of the players at any of those positions that go in that range. And then where do I come back in? I come back in like the Marcus Semien range of shortstops, or like at second base, the DJ LeMahieu range of second baseman, or at third base. I might be looking at somebody like Eugenio Suarez or Max Muncy or somebody like that. So that's generally how my drafts play out.
And as someone who doesn't just draft starting pitchers exclusively, I'm looking at Adalberto Mondesi and I never get him. I feel like his ADP is 54. He doesn't last that long. He is like a mid-round four pick in every draft I'm in, it seems. And, it's obvious why I want him. I know Chris likes Jonathan Villar. Who is not, is he, John Villar is not shortstop eligible in our leagues, is he?
He is.
Oh, he is? Okay.
Yep. And he's going to get outfield eligibility, it seems like, very early on in the season.
Right. That helps maybe a little. Okay, so that's shortstop for you. And just a quick name, it's sleeper shortstop. Who do you got, Scott?
Sleeper. Well, Dansby Swanson. You want me to go past like Corey Seager range?
Dansby Swanson is your answer. I remember from the position preview.
Yeah. Yeah. Dansby Swanson. Or if you need steel specifically, John Birdie.
Outfield. Outfield. What do we got?
Again, it's not a position where I think you have to have a strategy. The one thing that I would keep in mind that I found tripping me up sometimes this season and really every season is there are certain leagues where I just get too overzealous with outfield early on, and I find that I filled up my outfield, especially in a head-to-head points league, by like the 100th overall pick, and I've got three really good outfielders. But then what you'll see a lot of the times in the next 10 rounds is just the best hitter left is often an outfielder, and that can kind of screw you up from a roster construction standpoint.
Right. Don't fill it up too soon, and don't be afraid to grab one of those elite ones early. And, you know, I don't know that I want more than like two with my first five picks. If I had three outfielders with my first five picks, it would be an abject failure.
Well, certainly in a three outfielder league, that puts you in a bind. It makes a big difference whether your league uses three or five. We tend to talk in turn when we're talking about drafts and we're talking about these position previews. We kind of talk in terms like this is your team for the year. And of course, that's not the way it goes. You're making adds and drops, players that you expect to perform well don't, players you never saw coming emerge on the waiver wire. And you're making changes to your lineup throughout the season based on that. And outfield is one position where you know there are always going to be players emerging during the season. Now, you go so deep in a five outfielder league that you can't depend on it as much in a three outfielder league. But in a three outfielder league, like only 40 or so outfielders get drafted, 45. Like, there are going to be plenty beyond that point who end up performing like high end players that are just on nobody's team. And if you filled up your outfield with studs, you're not going to be able to take advantage of that.
I think you probably know what our starting pitcher strategy is.
Silenced it today. I'm sorry.
Every episode.
Four of Scott's top 37 starting pitchers. But you know, when we do the mock draft tomorrow, I think you might get a better sense of how the starting pitchers shape up. And then for relievers, I'm not going to be like super aggressive with relievers in a roto league because I think I'm probably going to. It depends. If I have a more balanced roster where I have a normal amount of starting pitchers, I'll probably only invest early in like two closers, early to fairly early, and then just try to play the waiver wire to get my saves because it's a very volatile position. But I could also go that roto strategy where I basically just try to win saves, ERA, and whip. So that's, you know, very format specific. In a points league, take advantage of the depth, take advantage of the sparps, get some sparps. Those are starting pitchers who are relief pitcher eligible. Carlos Carrasco, Jesus Luzardo, Kenta Maeda, Luis Arias.
So many this year.
So many. So do not, like, that would be so dumb to use two early picks on true closers in a points league. That is the way to lose your league. But, you know, I'm going to be pretty patient at closer, although I will say if I'm in a roto league, I probably want at least one closer that I feel great about. Any final thoughts there?
Yeah, just to give you a sense of what you can do at relief pitcher, in the head-to-head roto auction that we did on Friday, I think I ended up with Adrian Hauser and Julio Urias in my starting lineup, and that was with me basically waiting on starting pitcher longer than anyone. There's just so many good sparp options that really in a points league, I just cannot justify paying up for saves or a closer.
I've never been able to justify it in a points league. That's never something I've done. Like, they just, the best ones don't really have that big of an advantage. Like, it's really just whoever gets the most saves, right? Ends up being the most valuable one. So you're it's more job security you're pursuing, which is tied to how good the individual is, I guess. But like, everybody's pretty vulnerable at relief pitcher. Everybody who's holding that closer role. And even if you end up with one who doesn't last very long, there's usually a handful on the waiver wire just because every team only needs two of them. So if you're talking about league of standard size, 12 teams mixed, it's never something you should pay up for in a points league. I'd love paying up for it in a roto league because even then it's like there are going to be saves options emerging on waiver wire throughout the year. But at least then some teams have three or maybe even four, and so there's a little bit more scarcity, and they're in higher demand and all of that. In a points league, that's just, it's just not the case, particularly here where there's so many sparks.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We will talk to you tomorrow with a live mock draft. Until then, I'm Adam for Scott and Chris. See ya.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.